From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast to Coast AM. Later on tonight, paranormal encounters. Here's what's happening. The Ebola crisis proves that the World Health Organization lacks the capacity and the culture to deal with global health emergencies. This according to an independent report, which was commissioned by the WHO itself. The review panel says WHO was too slow to act to get on top of the deadly virus, which has now killed more than 11,000 people in West Africa. A 20-year-old woman was beaten to death by an exorcist in India. The woman had been suffering from severe headaches, for which her husband and a relative took her to an 18-year-old girl in a village who practices exorcisms for treatment. The victim was kept in a room and beaten the entire night, resulting in her death. The woman's husband, relative, and the girl have now been arrested and the body sent for post-mortem examination. A South Carolina couple in jail after they were arrested for banishing their daughter to the woods as a punishment for eating a Pop-Tart. The ample crowds and unexpectedly strong showing garnered by Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont setting off worry among advisors and allies of Hillary Clinton, who believe that the senator could overtake her in Iowa polls by the fall and even defeat her in the nation's first nominating contest there. Let's check in with Jerome Corsi, who writes for WND.com. Jerry, first of all, to most people, who is Bernie Sanders?
Bernie Sanders is a long-term leftist socialist, pretty radical member of the Democratic Party. He emerged as mayor of Burlington, Vermont, after he lost a series of elections in Vermont. He's really a 1960s hippie who moved into Vermont in the 60s, and he's really mounting a serious challenge, I believe, to Hillary Clinton as a socialist in the Democratic Party.
Can you believe that this country, though, would elect a socialist?
Well, George, always in the primaries, the Democrats who participate in the primaries are more leftists than Democrats who vote in the general election, just as in the Republican Party, primary voters tend to be more conservative than those who vote in the general election. So moving to the left as a strategy to succeed in the Democratic primaries is a good strategy. And Hillary Clinton has a floundering campaign. Just like in 2008, Hillary Clinton does not seem to be able to find her footing as a presidential candidate. And Bernie Sanders, as a 60s kind of hippie radical, is really attracting attention, and I think might have some staying power within the Democratic Party, at least through the primaries.
All right, Jerry, let's keep our eyes on this one. This is an amazing movement by Bernie Sanders and really the Hillary Clinton camp really concerned. Individuals' ages are at such differing rates that some grow older three times faster than other people of the same age, according to a new study. U.S. scientists who conducted the study in a group of 38-year-olds found that their biological ages ranged from 28 to 61, even though they were all 38. Experts created 18 measures to determine how quickly a person is aging, including tests of kidney, liver, lung, immune system functions, as well as assessments of metabolism, cholesterol, heart health, and lung function. And that's what they're saying. They're saying that, look, we looked at a study of 38-year-olds, and their ages biologically ranged from 28 to 61. Nikola Tesla was a famous 20th century Serbian-American scientist, of course, who is most famous for designing the alternating currency electricity AC supply system. The world-famed engineer could speak in eight languages, held 300 patents by the time he died, and his name was borrowed for that hot red car, an energy storage company created by entrepreneur Elon Musk, and has been cited as an inspiration by Google's co-founder Larry Page. It seems that Tesla also predicted the creation of the smartphone in 1926. In an interview, this is what he said. Listen to this. When wireless is perfectly applied, the whole earth will be converted into a huge brain, which in fact it is, all things being particles of a real and rhythmic whole. We shall be able to communicate with one another instantly, irrespective of distance. Not only this, but through television and telephone, we shall see and hear one another as perfectly as though we were face to face, despite intervening distances of thousands of miles. And the instruments through which we should be able to do this will be amazingly simple compared with our present telephone. A man will be able to carry one in his vest pocket. Could you believe he made that prediction in 1926? Well, he was a genius, wasn't he? Apple's got some problems, though. Sales of the new Apple Watch have plunged by 90% since the opening week, according to a new market research report. Apple has been selling fewer than 20,000 watches a day in the U.S. since the initial surge in April, and on some days, $10,000 a day. Let's check in with the expert on the Internet and technology, Lauren Weinstein. Lauren, this is an incredible story. They're saying nobody's buying. Well, I can't say nobody's buying them, but they're not selling them the way they thought they would.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're looking at here is the watch idea, regardless of who's making it. This is a very new technology segment, and it's very early in its development. So there are a lot of limitations. I mean, there's just no way around it. You got to charge them a lot. You know, I mean, the idea of charging a watch every day is not something that that I find particularly attractive. To do most of the functionality beyond the very basic sorts of things, you have to be tethered to a phone. So you have to have the smartphone and the watch. And I think it's just very early in the development of this. And so what you saw initially were the early adopters who pretty much will buy any new tech that comes down the line that has a fascination factor. But once you get past that, you have to more utility. And as batteries get better and built-in communications capabilities get better, I think this will change. I wanted to say something about Tesla.
Yeah.
Because he's someone that's a sort of a personal hero of mine, and I've studied him a lot over the years.
That was a great quote, by the way.
Oh, yeah. He was so far ahead of its time, and of course, society smashed him down.
His ideas for
transmitted power and all these sorts of things. And the really sad part about his story is he ended up dying alone in a hotel room where his main occupation was feeding pigeons. This is what society does to the really great brains, the really great thinkers who see beyond and see into the technological future. Brilliant, but a very sad story.
I would have had him on our show every week, Lauren. With you, we would do some kind of technology show with him.
Now he would have been a great guest. That would have been a great show.
Yep, super. Lauren, thanks. Keep in touch with us. And the Apple Watch just not selling the way they thought it would. New Horizons, that's the Pluto probe, is on a course for a flyby next week. They did lose some data, but very little, according to those scientists who say, when it went into safe mode over the weekend, and they are hoping everything will be okay as it does its flyby. A Canadian man who parachuted from a flying lawn chair powered by helium balloons, facing police charges now, Daniel Boria of Calgary, charged with mischief after he tied more than 100 helium-filled balloons to a lawn chair, strapped a parachute on his back, and just set sail over the city in a publicity stunt intended to advertise a cleaning products company. The 26-year-old was intending to steer the improvised aerial device over the Calgary Stampede, the city's annual rodeo and festival, over a million visitors a year. He was blown off course, jumped into a field, and he was met by police and arrested. So it took 100 helium balloons to carry him away. Up next, Jonathan Emore joins us. We're going to be talking about global censorship of health information, the rise of tyranny, and what are they doing in California? My, oh, my, oh, my. Stand by for Jonathan Emore next on Coast to Coast AM. I'm going to introduce here for you somebody that I respect so much, Jonathan Emore. He's a principal of Emore & Associates. He practices constitutional and administrative law in Washington, D.C. before federal agencies. He's the only attorney in history that has defeated the Food and Drug Administration a number of times in federal court on the First Amendment grounds specifically. He began his legal career as an attorney in the Mass Media Bureau of the Federal Communications Commission during the Reagan administration. We're going to be talking about a lot of issues today, especially California's, I will call it, forced vaccination bill, which is going to become law now. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, George.
Me too. So here we stand. Let's talk about California for just a moment. A vaccination bill signed by the governor becomes law. What the heck is going to happen in California?
Well, a distinct minority of Californians are going to be persecuted. But as for disease prevention, there's really going to be no change in the relative level of disease prevention before the bill was signed and after the bill was signed. This bill requires proof of immunization before any child may be enrolled in a private or public elementary school, child care center, nursery, development center. It eliminates the personal belief exemption that used to be in the law, which would protect this extreme minority of people who wish not to be vaccinated. But really, there's going to be no difference in the relative safety of the California population. It's just going to result in persecution of this minority. Before the bill was signed, 93% of Californians were vaccinated for measles, which was the impetus for the bill. And only 7% then were not. Of those 7%, a certain number had already had the measles and so were immunized by virtue of the fact that they had the disease.
Mm-hmm.
But by their own estimation, herd immunity, which is what they call this mass vaccination type of initiative, exists when 83% to 94% are vaccinated. You can never have 100% vaccination. So they already had 93%. So they didn't achieve anything substantive by forcing this bill on the people of California. But what they did do is take away freedom from a distinct minority of people who didn't want to be vaccinated, who really pose no threat to anyone other than themselves, if you accept the idea that they are at a higher risk of contracting these diseases, which is hard to estimate in any particular case.
Well, I was going to say, Jonathan, why are those who are proponents of vaccinations, why are they so concerned about being next to somebody who is not vaccinated? Because if they believe in vaccinations, the person who's been vaccinated is not going to come down with this disease, right?
Well, that's right. And, you know, ordinarily in the law, when your liberty rights are taken away from you, the law requires a very high standard of proof. It's called a compelling state interest test. And when fundamental liberty interests are at stake, the government, under the Due Process Clause, substantive due process, is forbidden from taking away those rights at all, no matter what process is provided, unless the infringement is narrowly tailored to serve a compelling state interest. But across the country, in the case of vaccination, this well-accepted 20th century origin standard for compelling state interest is not applied. Instead, we resort to a 1905 decision, Jacobson versus Commonwealth of Massachusetts, where Oliver Wendell Holmes, who was an advocate of eugenics, racial purity through genetic elimination of people from the gene pool who he thought were feeble-minded and so on, believed that you could have a general police power that includes health and safety that can override any interest in opposition to it to compel someone to be vaccinated. And that's not the modern standard, but still the law tends to favor that. Well, in this case in California, as I say, the law didn't do much good for people who are in the state generally, but it did do much harm to a distinct minority of folks who now have the prospect of either having to homeschool their kids not school them at all because they're not going to be admitted into public school or even into private school unless they meet the standard in the law, which requires them to have at least 10 disease immunizations before they enter school. the law does keep a medical exemption, but it's pretty tight. You have to get a written statement from a licensed physician stating that that physician's medical opinion is that immunization is not safe for that particular child, and the doctor has to have proof to back that up. So in California, conscientious objection to vaccination is no longer possible.
Is there going to be a holistic MD who might be able to do that for people?
Well, there might be, but, you know, in California, there's such a almost a religious fervor, a secular religious fervor in favor of vaccination, particularly on the medical board and among the societies that are for pediatricians, that any pediatrician who would dare dissent from this movement for mass vaccination is going to have his head on the chopping block. He's going to be brought up before the medical board. Can be complained about by his fellow physicians. That's kind of a witch hunt mentality out there right now.
What about other states now, Jonathan? Are they going to follow suit with California?
Well, some 29 states have bills similar to California, varying degrees of restriction of exemptions. But there is definitely, based on that, a movement across the country to restrict exemptions. And, you know, in California, the restriction affects freedom of religion, as it does in some of these other states, which is a profound restriction. People who are Christian scientists who fundamentally believe that it is harmful to their children to force them to be vaccinated or to accept modern medical treatment, in this instance, they're going to have to violate their own religious beliefs. And several religions believe that you should not do any harm to a child. That's in the Bible, the King James Version of the Bible. And so when one, you know, contemplates the prospect, you know, vaccines are not injury-free. Vaccines carry with them significant risk. In fact, in the case of measles, since 2005, there have been 5 deaths linked to the measles vaccine. In contradistinction to that, 136 people contracted measles in California between 2014 and 2015, and there were no deaths from the measles. So when someone's looking at, hey, look, there is a chance your child may die from the measles vaccine. It may be remote, but still there's a chance.
How many parents do you think get their kids vaccinated only because they feel bullied by state law to go ahead and do it, or they're scared, or they don't have that religious exemption, so they just go ahead and do it? I know my kids, Jonathan, when they had their children, and let me go back just a little bit. When my kids were babies, I didn't know anything about vaccinations, whether they were good, whether they were bad. It was something we always did. I got vaccinated. They got vaccinated. As I got older and I read more, I was really upset that I had vaccinated them. Thank God, I don't think anything's happened to them. But when they had their kids, all of them, I got 6 little ones running around, all my 3 kids were really concerned about whether to vaccinate or not. They did. But I think they felt forced that the system was pushing them in that direction. How many people feel trapped like that?
I think every mother, every father of a child born in America is immediately pressured into this system of vaccination. It's an orthodoxy, so that when you're in a hospital giving birth, the first thing oftentimes that a woman hears after the child is born, that the child should receive a vaccination. And dissent from that, you know, they bring out forms, they have you sign these forms to waive their liability. Something goes wrong with the vaccine. And obviously they have those experiences, or else they wouldn't have the waiver forms. And obviously there are vaccine-related injuries. In fact, there are 30,000 adverse event reports to the FDA on vaccinations every year. There is tremendous pressure. And then when the hospital then assigns or recommends a pediatrician, first thing you hear from the pediatrician is, all right, let's get that child vaccinated. We're going to go through a battery of vaccines over the next several years. Your child will have to come in and for regular appointments have these things. Any dissent that is expressed about that, or even questions about it, are rebuffed with rather stern admonitions that that's not possible. You can't do this. If you want your child to go to school, they'll have to be vaccinated. If you want your child to, you want to be a pariah, you want to put everyone else at risk, no. Well, then you better do your duty and get your child vaccinated. That's really an overbearing presence of the state, but also of the medical community and the pharmaceutical community, all working together to put people into this system, whether they like it or not. I'm not saying that all vaccines are bad. I'm not saying that people shouldn't have a right to have their kids vaccinated. They certainly should. But
it should be their choice, Jonathan, their choice. We're going to come back. We'll talk some more about what you've been working on. And in our second hour, we'll take phone calls from parents or concerned folks. We'll be back. Welcome back. We're with attorney Jonathan Emord. And Jonathan, before we get back to your bucket list of things that we want to talk about for this hour, and we'll take more calls next hour with you, what can people in California do now that this is law and they still may be opposed to it? What do they do?
Well, they have the referendum process in California, so you could repeal this thing. The other thing I think could be that could be done is a challenge to this law based on people who would abide by, agree to, in writing, based on an association of people, to abide by certain hygienic practices that modern immunology teaches eliminate virtually down to the point of zero the risk of disease transmission, even better than if you were vaccinated, because some people who are vaccinated will still transmit the disease. In fact, in the case of the measles, for a two-week period after you're vaccinated, you may transmit the disease because of the vaccination. So what are those things? There are obvious, less restrictive alternatives to banning someone from public school, and that is if during a contagion or risk of contagion you wore a mask or gloves, use observed personal hygiene, avoid interpersonal contact. In the case of an extreme disease transmission, highly contagious disease, you could remain at home and be homeschooled for that period of time. There are many alternatives to just banning kids from public schools. I mean, and modern immunology teaches us this. So why it's not done, I don't understand. But I think it's just a draconian, bullying kind of approach to a minority of people. So anyway, those types of things can be done. And I think if an association of parents who didn't want to have their kids vaccinated would agree to abide by these conditions, they could then sue the state and say, we pose less of a risk of disease transmission or carriage than even people who are vaccinated. And therefore, the law violates the 14th Amendment. It violates our liberty rights. We're responsible,
Jonathan,
citizens.
Right before the break, you were saying that you're not opposed to all vaccines. Now, there are some people who are. But in your opinion, what are you more concerned about? The fact that they are forcing people to do this, or because they're forcing them to take a vaccine? Two different issues. There's one forcing people to do something they don't want, and then forcing them to take something that may not be good for them.
In the end, what we're talking about is your unalienable rights, as the Declaration of Independence tells us. We just had the 4th celebration. We ought to remember that. Great document. Our unalienable right to life, liberty, and property. Life and liberty are at stake here, and the right to dissent from something being injected into your body, forcibly injected into your body, is a palpable right of liberty. It's not a simple right. It's not something that's trivial. It's profound to be able to say against the state that I do not want to be injected. I do not want a physically invasive process performed. Is a fundamental liberty interest and right. If the state can vaccinate you against your will based on a public health and safety rationale, it can sterilize you based on a public health and safety rationale. And in fact, in Buck versus Bell in 1925, Oliver Wendell Holmes, who came up with the constitutional argument in Jacobson for vaccination, cited to Jacobson in defense of the determination that a person could be forcibly sterilized because they would produce what he said were imbeciles if they were allowed to procreate. This paternalistic notion of the state, you give the state this power. I mean, in modern terms, look at it this way. what's to stop the state of California from determining that every Californian who's an adult should be genetically tested to determine whether or not they carry a gene that would be capable of transmitting Tay-Sachs disease or sickle cell anemia or some other disease, Down syndrome, and then compelling the person to be sterilized.
Or one day somebody comes into California with Ebola and they force the entire population to get an Ebola vaccine, which could be worse than Ebola.
Right. The individual choice, you know, you're taking your own risk. You're doing your own risk assessment. To be free is to be able to do that. This is not unusual. We make risk-benefit calculations every day because we wish to be free. The state's not making it for us. There's nothing different in the case of disease. In fact, that's one of the most common risk-benefit assessments we make in life. And there are certain diseases for which there are vaccines. There are a vast majority of diseases for which there are not vaccines. And yet we seem to cope without condemning the people who are at risk of contracting those diseases. Do we really want to be a society in which we pick on individual minorities who are at higher risk of cancer or higher risk of heart disease or higher risk of one disease or another? Do we want the state to have the power to go after those people and subject them to required medical regimens in order to reduce the risk that they will get those diseases when those diseases will really fall upon them? Why not give them the freedom to do as they think best in their own best interest? Why not give the rest of us the freedom to choose whether to be vaccinated or not, whether to receive any medical procedure or not? That's an inherent freedom. We have to have personal autonomy, control over our own bodies. There may be instances in which there's an actual huge threat to public health that justifies overriding individual interests to the contrary based on adherence to the standards that we've accepted under the 14th Amendment, that the means chosen are narrowly tailored to achieve a compelling end in a specific context. Here you've got a general health and safety argument being used to attack a minority of people who are dissenting without any proof whatsoever that those specific people pose a risk to anybody for anything. And yet we're going to make them be vaccinated? We're going to say you can't have the privilege of going to public school, the right that we give to every kid in California, because you, on this one instance, are dissenting, even though there's no specific proof that you're creating a risk to anyone in a specific circumstance, even though we could send you to a school that doesn't have a measles outbreak, or if there were an outbreak, or we could have you stay at home, we're going to instead force you to have your kid injected with a substance against your will.
Do we know, Jonathan, if this law, how it was originated, if there was a strong pharmaceutical lobby behind it or anything like that?
Well, yes, the author of the bill, his co-author is Senator Ben Allen, but Richard Pan, State Senator Richard Pan from Sacramento, is the principal author of the bill. And he receives from the pharmaceutical industry the highest amount of any member of the California legislature, about $100,000 from the pharmaceutical industry.
Which is a lot of money for a state-run office.
Sure is. And I'm not saying he's a patsy for everything that is of the pharmaceutical industry, but I believe in this instance he has performed well for those in the pharmaceutical industry who equally lobbied, you know, for this bill to pass. He's not alone in that regard. There are many members who signed up for this. Obviously, it passed, and even Governor Jerry Brown signed it on June the 30th. But it is a fascistic, you know, fascistic measure. It's not intelligent to compel people without any proof in a specific case of a risk, to compel a person to be injected with a vaccine that carries with it a risk. No vaccine is risk-free, is an outrage. If you could show in a specific, you know, they could have adopted a test where they said, if you show in a specific case that a child has a high percentage likelihood of being a carrier of a disease, in that specific instance, if they refuse to abide by measures short of vaccination that would protect the public, then you could compel them to be vaccinated. That would be more intelligent. Instead, they adopted this dumb measure that just says, no, you can't go to school regardless of the circumstance unless you get these 10 vaccines, no matter what.
And I bet they'll still collect the property tax, won't they?
Yeah, yeah. It is, in today's world, with the knowledge that we have about immunology, to take this position, which gives no right of dissent, is really fascistic. In fact, the origins of this whole thing are fascism. Oliver Wendell Holmes, a lot of people don't understand, who wrote the Jacobson decision, which is the basis for modern vaccination, believed in execution of those he deemed, quote, feeble-minded or, quote, undesirable or inadequate. In fact, he believed in a pure American bloodline through government-mandated infanticide and sterilization. This is a quote from Justice Holmes. Substituting artificial selection for natural by putting to death the inadequate is our goal. He professed contempt for socialism's not prepared to kill everyone below standard. And it's that kind of a thing. You know, he said, whatever the cost to achieve the goal of keeping certain strains out of our blood, quote unquote. He believed in, quote, restricting propagation by the undesirables and putting to death infants that don't pass the exam, that didn't pass the examination, et cetera, et cetera. He said, you know, this is repulsive, but this is one strain of powerful thinking that was present that underlies Nazi Germany, that underlies this notion of an Aryan race or a pure-blooded race. It's nonsense scientifically, but it is because of this that he lowered the standard of protection under the 14th Amendment to allow vaccines to be uniquely able to be imposed on people without anything more than this zeitgeist of, you know, public health. That's all I have to say is public health, you must be vaccinated. Public health, you must be sterilized. We think you're an imbecile. We think that you will produce children that are unfit for society. You must be sterilized. It's that kind of draconian deprivation of liberty that is antithetical to what this country is about. The founding fathers individually might have been vaccinated. In fact, Thomas Jefferson was vaccinated for smallpox, and he vaccinated his daughters for smallpox. But he would be the last person in the world to advocate legislation that would compel everybody to be vaccinated. It violates our fundamental notions of liberty in this country.
We're with constitutional attorney Jonathan E. Moore. Jonathan, what else are you looking at these days?
Well, I'm deeply concerned, as I explained in my book, The Rise of Tyranny, I'm deeply concerned with the growth of the administrative state. You know, George, 9/10 of all federal law are now no longer the product of the people we elect to office, but rather they're the product of over 250 independent regulatory agencies that truly run this country. We're ruled by a bureaucratic oligarchy. We no longer have a republic in this country. And it's a horror because it's really a manifest example of tyranny. In a nation that's constitution is a constitution of liberty, where governments are instituted among men to protect the rights of the governed, we now have that turned on its head, and we live very much like we did under the reign of George III. We are deprived of liberty by bureaucratic agencies that exercise legislative, executive, and judicial power combined, which James Madison said was the very definition of tyranny. So apparently we have Madison's definition of tyranny and indeed Montesquieu's definition of tyranny working in this country, and it's one of the reasons why we're so frustrated by government, why it seems nothing ever changes and everything seems to get worse. And presently I'm fighting the Federal Trade Commission in a number of cases, and I'm really appalled by the fact that honest people who work hard for a living, who come up with inventions that transform society, can be brought down financially and their businesses ruined and their employees rendered unemployed by a bureaucratic agency that goes wild over the meaning of a sentence. And not only that, over implied meanings that don't even exist in any advertising or promotion that they do. It's government run riot. It's bureaucracy without accountability. It's the rule of law being transgressed by agencies that can rewrite every sentence that is adopted in a statute by the people's elected representatives. It is often the case, not seldom, but often the case, that laws intended to mean one thing when passed by Congress are reinterpreted to mean the opposite by the regulatory agencies. And they're the ones that implement the laws. So we are in trouble, George, in this country.
We sure are.
And we really need to restore the republic before we lose it. You know, the famous line from Benjamin Franklin when he left the Constitutional Convention. He was asked by a passerby, what have we got, Dr. Franklin? And he said, a republic, if you can keep it. Well, we've lost it, George. We have elements of it, but principally it's no longer here. The republic given to us, which was the greatest thing in the history of the world, the first instance of a written constitution that was for liberty, for individual liberty, a government instituted among men to protect their rights, unique and extraordinary event, has been sapped away, principally from the 1930s to the present, until now we have a rule of law dictated by people we don't elect, who impose upon us restrictions on our liberty, on our businesses, without ever having to account for what they do. And people labor under these things. And my goodness, if we lifted these restrictions, the economic progress we could make, the innovations that would come into the market, the enhancement of our gross domestic product, the standard of living in this country would all go greatly upwards. You know, this is the first time in American history, George, when the standard of living in America is less than the standard of living in Canada.
I know it. I know. And I love Canada, and they're great people. They're the greatest neighbors we could have. But we used to have a standard of living that was second to none. Have you been following, Jonathan, this story of missing doctors and PhDs and three dead doctors, all who have dabbled in the holistic alternative medicine field? Have you been aware of that
yes.
one?
Yes,
that
I
is
haven't.
A strange story.
It's vexing, but there are many questions that need to be answered here. Obviously, this is a particular attack, and where it's coming from, who's interested in doing this, why it is happening, I don't know. But I hope people will put in the resources necessary to bring some answers, because this is, this is very troublesome. People who are dissenters, again, we're talking about groups of people who dissent from the generally accepted position, the orthodoxy, are under attack. Here their lives have been taken. There are many stories as to what has happened, but we need the facts. We need to find out what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, we can speculate. Some of them apparently have had their offices raided by the feds. There's something going on. We can't quite pinpoint it yet. But when you talk about, two missing, three dead, we've had stories over the last 12 years I've been doing, plus this show, we have had cases of dying microbiologists who have died under very strange circumstances. Jonathan, something very strange is afoot.
No question about it.
We're going to come back in a moment with Jonathan Emord. We're going to take your phone calls, questions, first of all, or your reaction to the California law now of forced vaccination. If you're a parent, maybe you want to share your story or your views as well. It is a mind-boggling story. It's happening right here in the United States. What are we going to do about it? We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.